Maggie was feeling poorly from her pregnancy. She rejected more food that spring than she consumed, and seemed frustrated by the progress of the remodeling job that I was doing myself, with two paid helpers, one of whom was a listless, aging junkie who drilled through walls into current bearing wires and clogged the toilet almost every time he used it. We'd passed through the stage when you talk about the baby, what its room will be like, whose features it will have, and into the one where you watch the TV news and wonder, without saying anything out loud, why you ever decided to reproduce. Or maybe only I wondered. Aside from her nausea, Maggie seemed happy enough. My fear of fatherhood wasn't normal fear, though. Instead of releasing adrenaline, it sapped it, producing a stony, inert fatigue, as though I'd been injected with heavy plastic. Sometimes, if I had an article to write, I took Ritalin in my office or at home, followed by Ambien to bring on sleep. The Ambien only worked for a few hours, and I would wake up in a dream state and raid the kitchen, preparing weird mashes of flour and pancake syrup that I would find smeared on dishes in the morning. Sometimes I also found emails to old girlfriends and misspelled, unpunctuated notes for lurid short stories with outlandish settings, including once, a brothel in the Arctic. My last trip to Billings had been especially harrowing. I met up with a source, a 20-year-old addict, who'd abandoned her toddler during a 3-week meth spree and drove with her to an abandoned house where she was squatting with 3 male friends who were living off welfare checks that she was still receiving even though her child was in foster care. I interviewed them in the kitchen. It was empty, except for a pyramid of beer cans, assembled with such maniacal precision that no light could be seen between the cans. They stood 4 feet high where the table should have been. The tweakers were cooperative at first, but things disintegrated when they asked the girl for her check, and she answered that she'd lost it. She'd told me it was hidden in her underwear. One of her friends dumped her purse out on the floor, while another went upstairs and came back down with an army-style rifle. He pointed it at me and my photographer and asked who we really worked for. Time, I said. But who owned Time? I tried to tell him. The girl started trying to talk him down, allowing me to slip out with the photographer. We drove a circuitous route to our motel, but the Ritalin in me convinced me we'd been followed. Too jumpy to sleep, I cracked the blinds and monitored the parking lot all night. At the end of the Piper's driveway, I stopped my truck. Beside me, on a plywood platform that I'd made myself and covered with a green blanket, Shelby lay with her nose stuck in a vent. In front of us was the immense Montana sky. White clouds were stacked up to the atmosphere's curved ceiling, and monumental disclosures seemed at hand. I lit a cigarette to prepare for them, and entered a frontage road that served I-90, exhaling sideways through my rolled-down window.